chaos and confusion, there are but two geeks who can clear everything up. Anna and Dave, Geek World, Thursdays at noon on 92.5 KYHY Burbank.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Check out our website at geekworldradio.com and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio.
What was that all about? You verklempt or something?
No, I looked over at you and it just, the way you were sitting all like leaned back with your arms folded,
yes.
I was trying to hold back a giggle.
Oh, what's that all about? Why do I look funny? I'm like a clown.
You were just lounging. Yeah, kind
of. I was just chilling out, you know. I'm going to be relaxed right now. You know?
Just a reminder to all of you to send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com with the geekiest thing you've ever done or the craziest story that you can make up about the geekiest thing that you've ever pretended to do so that you can win tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con on May 27th through 30th at the Phoenix Convention Center. So send those emails, geekworldradio@yahoo.com, and you could win tickets.
So cool. You know, but make it good if you're going to make it up. Make up something like, you know, you sideswipe Stan Lee or something.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, that the winner is going to be the craziest story we can find. And if your story is awesome enough, then we will we'll totally post it on the website with a credit to you or whatever name you want to be known by. For winning tickets, the plan is that you should be able to win two tickets. So, if you win, I'll get back in touch with you, and you can tell me give me your full name and the full name of the person you're taking with you,
and your social security number and your credit card.
No, none of that stuff. This is a legitimate contest.
Well, it is for you. I'm planning on I'm actually not smart enough to come up with any kind of cool plan like that.
Taking over the world?
Yeah. You know, we noticed that, too. There aren't a lot of female supervillains who are trying to take over the world. That's mostly a guy's bag, really.
Well, the thing with the female supervillains is that they tend not to be real, true supervillains. Like, they're either not psychotic, like they were abused as children, or they have to really qualify why they're evil and why they're not actually evil. And then if it's a good enough character, then they have to make them no longer evil and actually good, you know, and so that they can be a part of the superhero team. You know what I mean? There's not really, they don't really go ahead with true female supervillains that often.
No, you know, they don't. We found also that a lot of the ones that end up villainesses who end up being really popular usually end up, you know, getting their own title and becoming heroic.
Mm-hmm.
And turning them into the heroes.
That's what I was just saying.
We want to talk about
Xena, like, starts off on Hercules as purely evil and out to get Hercules and you know, whatever episode in the first season she changes her ways and becomes good and becomes Xena the Warrior Princess.
You know, it's really funny that Xena's sort of introduction into Hercules and then into her own show sort of reminded me of Captain Jack Harkness in Doctor Who.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, Captain Jack started off as a criminal and then sort of became a good guy as time went on. But we wanted to talk a little bit about video games now, right?
Okay, I know that when I played video games, I just liked to use whoever I could button mash the best with.
Yes.
It didn't matter, male, female, animal, whatever. Yeah. I was just going to go with whoever I could button mash the best with and kick butt with. Because I was a really good button masher.
Yes, you were. Yes, you are.
But I know a lot of, especially, you know, bigger gamers and kids at the time, it was, you know, I'm a boy, I can't play girl characters.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up, late 80s, Street Fighter 2 came out. Me and all my friends would play it. When we would bowl as little kids. That's what kids did in upstate New York is on Saturday. They bowled. And basically, you know, we would all kind of gang up around the arcade. And there was always this one friend I had that would be Chun-Li, because none of the other guys are going to be Chun-Li. Because mm-hmm. That's the thing. When you're a little boy, girls, you know, you don't like girls. Girls are ew. You know, girls are, like, stupid. You don't like them. And so, you know, I had one friend who would play Chun-Li, and he would always beat a lot of us. And, you know, I think a lot of us figured he was just really good at the game. And, you know, we didn't realize until, you know, much later when we actually, you know, were, quote-unquote, man enough, or whatever you want to say, to play Chun-Li, that mm-hmm. she's, you know, one of the best characters. And mm-hmm. I really think that the video game, you know, the video game makers, you know, Capcom and in that consideration, I think they... I like to believe they make most of the female fighters more powerful than the male fighters because they know most guys aren't going to be the girl.
Well, what's interesting that you notice more now when they really show you like the people's power levels and stuff like that is that the female characters are often like far quicker than the male characters and sometimes equally or just under as strong. And so if you're super fast and can essentially avoid anyone's punch and then you can punch them even remotely nearly as hard as they can punch you, well, then you have a very good chance of winning because you can escape way more easily and then, you know, kick their butt.
You know, Chun-Li was a really cool character because not only was she, you know, she was a cop and she was a good role model, but also, you know, she was very quick. She had that awesome shadow kick, but she also had the sort of fireball like Ryu or Ken had. Mm-hmm. So she really had all the stuff you need to be a really good fighter. And I remember after that, you know, Chun-Li was obviously the first playable female character in a fighting game. And I always remember, you know, her trademark was she had these gigantic thighs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was sort of like how they showed, you know, because at that time in the late 80s, you know, with the Schwarzeneggers and the Van Dams, you know, all the guy characters were gigantic, big, muscular dudes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all the women were these little dainty things because you weren't going to, you know, sometimes they would have the monster women in like a fighting game like Double Dragon or something, you know, where you had big muscles. But overall, women tend to be made, you know, very dainty. And so, you know, they gave Chun-Li those like huge legs to show that she had
leg.
Power.
Well, it's funny because they gave her a body like a volleyball player,
exactly.
You know, which makes it so that you can believe that she could jump up in the air and kick you in the face.
I would say they actually gave her the body of a speed skater.
Yeah.
Like
actually,
a short track speed skater.
Yeah.
Or long track or whatever.
Apollo Ono skates, right?
Yeah, which is short track. Also, you know, after that, a few years later, came out Mortal Kombat, and we got Sonya Blade,
mm-hmm.
who also, by the way, you know, was a really fantastic female role model. I mean, she was the head of her own unit,
mm-hmm.
a special government unit, and, you know, she went into Mortal Kombat.
You said
unit. She went into Mortal Kombat, I believe, to catch, you know, what's his name there? I can't remember his name anymore. It's been so long. Was it Kane or something like that? You know what I'm talking about, right?
That seems right, yeah.
Yeah, the guy with a Kano. Kano, that's his name. Yeah, she went in to catch him, and you know, she was also one of these first playable characters, along with the fact that, if you remember Mortal Kombat, they did that weird thing where they videotaped humans.
Oh, my God.
And that was
That's right. Oh, that was so weird.
And that was really...
Oh, that was creepy and awesome all at once.
That was one of the first games that really brought about the whole, you know, onslaught against video game violence because they looked like real people and they had the red blood.
Which was also some of the most ridiculous thing ever, because it's like, you know, you had someone ripping somebody's spine out through like their mouth, you know, like, really, like, you're gonna get all up in arms about this, like something that's totally undoable, you know. It's ridiculous. Like, that's like getting upset that like a dragon eats somebody's head, you know. like really.
Well, yeah, you know, it was a very different time, and it was very, you know, there was
a whole lot of backlash against anything anyone could think of to backlash against.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was one of those times where America didn't have as many problems, and so we looked for things to be upset about,
uh-huh.
and video game violence was one of them, and you know, from there...
That's why when they tried to make The Matrix originally, they tried to make it perfection for us, but we as humans, we just wouldn't take it. We just wouldn't take the programming, because we need to find problems.
Exactly. And, you know, I think after that, video games are a very interesting place for female characters, because video games, they cross the gamut between some of the strongest, most... really honorable female characters out there in all fiction to some of the most, you know, sexist characters you could possibly imagine.
And the funny thing about that is that it kind of stems back from just Japan in general, because that's where a lot of our video games, you know, originated from. But also it's a direct link from manga to video games, where, again, you have some of the strongest, most empowered female characters, and then some of the worst examples of damsels in distress ever.
Yes, yeah, like, obviously, you know, the Mario princesses, it took them a few years to actually become very like strong enough to, you know, not always need the plumber's
help. Yeah, at least in the dream world of Mario 2, you could play as princess.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, you can't help but mention DOA.
Yes.
You know, DOA was a really kind of big turning moment where, you know, they spent a large part of the processing power perfecting Boob Jiggle.
Yeah.
And it was really a game all about, you know, showcasing that. But what was funny about it is it was actually a very decent fighting game.
Yeah.
I remember I actually didn't like it as much because the game had a lot of grappling. It was actually very, in some ways, it had a lot of, it had actual realistic fighting in it. You know, you watch MMA, you watch that stuff, and you see guys grapple a lot. You see a lot of stuff that isn't like a movie. It's not a Van Damme movie where someone jumps and kicks someone in the head 15 times.
Well, all I can say about DOA is it's the first game that ever made me girly. like that is the first franchise that ever made me do something girly.
Well, you mean DOA Beach Volleyball?
The franchise.
Yeah.
DOA Beach Volleyball. I just got so excited that I could, like, you know, win points and then give somebody a hat. And then next time I play volleyball with them, they'd wear the hat. And I'd be like, oh my God, she's wearing the hat I gave her. And it would make me happy. You know, it's like I've never been that girly about anything. I'm not that girly in life. And yet in video games, it's like, oh boy, look at me buying a hat for somebody.
Yeah, you know, but I agree. You know, but the another thing you need to look at with DOA is the fact that...
And then I would kick her butt in volleyball.
Yes. Is the fact that, yes, it's very, very... It sexualizes women very much. It objectifies them very much. However, it's one of the few game franchises that all the main characters that are important are females.
See, but again, this is what I was saying before, that it only sexualizes women if you choose to see it that way. You know, you got to think about how a lot of these, a lot of them look and how, you know, just granted, yeah, they have them do the little wiggle and go, you know.
That's my favorite part.
But the thing is that the whole point is that they're so powerful that they can kick your butt while wearing a bikini. You know?
Yeah.
They can wear next to nothing and get you dead on the ground.
Yes.
You know? And do it like that. You know? And that's the thing about them, that they are, that these women are even more empowered because it doesn't matter. It's not that, you know, someone is forcing them to wear bikinis. It's that they're at the beach. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be dressed how they want to, and they're going to kick your ass.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's very true. And you know, once again, I like any way that you can make me feel like it's okay to appreciate, you know, women with large breasts fighting.
Well,
and, you know, make it okay.
There's nothing wrong with appreciating it. What becomes wrong is when you then see it as yours. You know, it's
like to
see it and go, well, she's dressed like that, therefore she is just a sex object, and I can just take her. You know what I mean?
You.
It's like that's when it becomes wrong. That's when it becomes, you know, and again, that's not the problem with the woman. That's the problem with the man who sees her that way. You know what I mean? It's the problem with other people's perceptions rather than being a problem of, you know, that the woman is wearing something skimpy. It's like, you know, it's like people that blame victims for things.
Yes.
You know,
I learned all about this stuff. I took a college course about this kind of thing called sexual oppression. I was looking, I was like, man, what would interest me? Oh, I know, sexual oppression. Apparently, it didn't really teach me how to sexually oppress anybody, but I got to learn a lot about, you know, civil rights and stuff, and so that was really nice.
But there's
really, at least for me, there's two major women I always think about when I think of video games. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't say that. There's four major women, but two of the most major is one is, you know, the one that everyone knows as, you didn't even realize she was a woman until the end of the game, which of course is the main character, Metroid.
And that was probably one of the most genius moves that they ever could have done, because, you know, you get through this entire game and you're like, wow, coolest character. This game is awesome. And it's like, I was a girl.
Yeah. It's sort of like that.
And then for any of the girls that were playing, it was like, yes, I was a girl.
It's sort of like that, you know, that moment in Psycho when all of a sudden you see Norman Bates in his mom's dress and the wig. It was just like the biggest, like, reveal that no one expected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think, you know, it taught a lot of guys, wow, maybe there is a girl inside somewhere.
Wow.
No.
That's weird.
No, that is weird. I was going to try to turn that into a joke, and it didn't work out at all. But the other, obviously, main character, which sort of changed everything, of course, in the late 90s, is Lara Croft, which we already talked about before, which, you know, really started that kind of frenzy of... it was about the time where graphics were getting good enough that people were looking sort of, like, you know, realistic.
Yeah, I mean,
more so than they could be.
If you actually look back at the old Lara Croft images, it's like, there is nothing even remotely realistic about her. It's like, wow, so she has arms and legs, and they're not totally pixelated 8-bit, you know, but for the time, it was better than they could do without using, you know, photographs.
I mean, when the internet was blowing up, you couldn't go to a website without seeing some sort of fan art of a naked picture of Lara Croft.
Yeah.
Like, she is, like, really, truly the biggest video game sex symbol of all time. Mm-hmm. I really don't see anyone usurping her. And I could never understand that. I was like, why do people think she's hot? And then I play Resident Evil 5, and, you know, what's her name there?
Sheva?
Yes, Sheva is totally, totally awesome, but it's not Sheva, it's Axella.
Oh, Axella, yeah.
And I said, I totally get it now.
Yeah.
But
actually, let's talk about Lara Croft for a second.
Yeah.
And the fact that she is a sex symbol. And again, here's kind of where the irony comes of that, you know, people talk about her outfit and her little shorts and her tank top and stuff. And to be perfectly honest, that's actually far more covered than, like, the DOA girls some of the time.
Yeah.
Far more covered than one of Ivy's costumes in Soul Calibur, you know. You actually pointed out something really funny.
Yeah, it's funny because I was thinking about the fact that, yeah, Lara Croft, you know, she started off with the tank top and the tiny shorts, and I think some people thought that was a little sexist to show, you know, so much of her. But at the same time, you know, I was thinking about it really wasn't any more revealing than, like, a Sly's costume in Cliffhanger.
In fact, it was practically the exact same outfit.
Yeah,
you know, and really the thing is that the outfit makes sense. She's, you know, she's adventuring, so, you know, she needs to you know, have, like, a pair of cargo shorts or whatever, but, you know, when you're running around in the desert or whatever, you need something that suits the weather.
Yes, exactly.
And you need something that suits the adventuring. And, you know, as Sly showed us in Cliffhanger, when you're hanging off cliffs, you wear shorts.
Yes, tiny spandex shorts and also a tiny tank top, as I recall.
Yeah.
It was also spandex.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, though. People don't look at Sly and Cliffhanger and go, wow, that's a revealing outfit he's wearing, you know. But because Lara Croft has boobs, or just because it's a female, it's, oh, you people should be embarrassed by sexualizing that woman. It's like, no. You should be embarrassed by sexualizing that woman for feeling like it's being sexualized because of what she's wearing. It's like,
yes,
you're the one doing that, you know? You're the one who's putting a sexual context to her outfit.
I totally agree to you. You know, Lara Croft is just one of these great characters. The other thing about the reason why Lara Croft became so famous is Tomb Raider, the series, is just a great series of games.
Yeah,
you know,
great
it was a really great adventure shooter, and it came out at a time where they were transitioning, you know, from platforms into more environmental stuff.
It also gave people kind of the Indiana Jones fix.
Yeah.
You know, that like the movies, you know, that they weren't necessarily going at the time, and so people wanted their adventurer fix, and Lara Croft proved to be a great character to join on her adventure.
And it's funny because Uncharted, you know, a lot of people say it's like Indiana Jones in a video game, but it's also like a male Tomb Raider.
It really is.
And you know, and that doesn't take away from it, because the fact is that Tomb Raider was a fantastic series of games. I think what we should talk about now, though, is another who I can actually, my favorite female video game character of all time is pretty much by far Jill Valentine.
I think there are a lot of people that would definitely agree with you on that one.
I mean, you know, she was in the first game, you know, Chris Redfield, one of the survivors of the mansion, and you know, she also went on to, not only was she in a few other video Resident Evil games, but she was also in, like, Marvel versus Capcom, and a few other video games that weren't even Resident Evil games.
Yeah, and she was also, while they did put her character into the second live-action movie, I remember when the first movie came out, people were pretty irate that there was no Jill Valentine, or at least Claire Redfield, but people wanted Jill. They were like, why? What? Like, we like Mila and all, but why? Why don't you have Jill? Why can't she be Jill? Who's Alice? You know?
Yeah.
And people were really upset because Jill Valentine had proven to be such a strong character, and largely one of the things that made her so strong was, again, one of the fact that she wasn't sexualized at all.
Yeah.
She was a cop. She was a member of the STARS unit, you know. She was, it was based on this, the power of this little girl, you know, this tiny little STARS agent,
Jill,
you know?
The master of unlocking.
Exactly, you know, and she was a master of unlocking, and she could kick butt and shoot your butt, and, like, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think Jill, what was really cool about Jill, what I recall from playing the first Resident Evil game when I was a kid, is they didn't force you to be the female character. Like any game, you know, you were able to be either Jill or Chris Redfield, but there was an incentive to play as her. And that was the fact that when you start off the game, they all lose their weapons, but Jill still has her gun. Granted, she only has a few rounds in it, but she still has a gun when Chris doesn't have a knife. And so I, you know, first and foremost started playing as Jill because she had a gun, and it was just easier because the game itself is really hard. And, you know, I think that was a really good ploy by them to get that character to have more guys play.
Yeah.
To have more guys play with her. I guess that would be kind of a weird way to put it. But I think, you
that's probably the most sexist thing you've said all night.
Yeah, I know. I didn't
mean that way.
And it's funny because, I just thought it was a great idea. And, you know, from there, she's just proven to be really strong. And also in the relationship between her and Chris Redfield, you know, which is, as far as I know, totally platonic. And the fact is, you know, they respect each other's teammates.
Yeah.
And there isn't a thing like, I need to go save Jill because she's a girl who can't save herself. It's my partner needs help. I need to go get her.
It's funny. At the end of Resident Evil 5, you almost get the impression that, like, that there's becoming more of a sexual component there.
Yeah.
Like, but it's not, it's not a sexualized thing. It's more like, you know, these two people have been kind of so connected for all of these years through all of these ridiculous zombie hunts.
Yeah.
That now it's like, you know, who else would be better for Chris Redfield than Jill Valentine, and who would be better for Jill Valentine than Chris Redfield?
It's true. You know, I really equate those two to sort of a Mulder Scully type relationship where they
and they ended up together.
Exactly. And, you know, we should also talk about Dana Scully, who I think is also one of the great female characters
and great female role models.
Yeah, I mean, completely. I mean, she, you know, she went toe to toe with Fox Mulder, and she was always, you know, willing to be like, dude, you're an idiot, and that doesn't make any sense. Granted,
she never really learned that monsters exist.
But that's the failure of the writers. Not so much the character. And at least
she was always strong in her disbelief.
And, you know, Gillian Anderson is just a fantastic actress and really brought a lot of credibility to that role. You know, and they could have picked somebody who was just some blonde, you know, ditz to play it, though that wouldn't have been a very smart idea. And instead they got somebody who was really, really very respectable and very... how do I put this? I don't know. What would you say about...
You know, her character was so dignified, and her character was so smart. So it was like her brain was one of her most important assets, you know? And that's one of the great things about some of these characters, you know, about a few of these female characters, that they give them the job of being the brain.
Yeah, and you're right. And it's totally funny, too, because I recall now, you know, part of the thing that made Dana Scully so impressive was I think she wrote her dissertation of school about like rewriting one of Einstein's theories or something
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing, that you needed someone that whose intelligence could match, if not surpass, Fox Mulder, who besides the fact that he had a photographic memory, was also one of the most prolific profilers of his young age. You know,
and I think it's also very interesting that there tends to be a few great female characters out there that. The whole story, though, they might not be the only main character. There might be another male main character. A lot of the stories unfold kind of through their eyes. You know, we often talk about Doctor Who and how much we like the Doctor Who's companions, who are pretty much always female, you know, at least in the newer series. And, you know, like, for instance, Rose is a really good example how, you know...
The old series, mostly female.
And, you know, in the reboot 2005, you know, the episode Rose, the first one, we got to see everything from Rose. Point of view, and you know, and even in the X-Files, you were introduced to Fox Mulder via Dana Scully's journey to him, and I think you know, it's really interesting. It's sort of like Nikita when we watched it the other night. You know, it's like there's only two or three, four scenes at most that you see that she's not in the room. Pretty much the entire thing is based in her perspective.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, that's a really interesting thing that a lot of writers do. Same thing with the new Doctor Who, with Amy Pond.
Yes.
Who we're finding is very interesting and very different from a lot of the other companions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I always like that. I always think it's a really cool thing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. It's a lot of these are very much through the eyes of the female. But that's actually, it both helps and hurts when you have a writer that treats the character with respect, that treats the character that doesn't feel like they're forced to add female things, you know, things that you know And unfortunately, a lot of these, the writers are men that have their own perceptions of what these female things they should add are. And unfortunately, a lot of the time, those are just inaccurate and get to the point of actually offending a lot of women.
Yeah, you know, it's
like, I don't want my heroes to have to put on lipstick before they leave, you know?
Yeah.
I don't appreciate that because I don't even put on lipstick before I leave, you know?
Like, well, you're not fighting evil, though.
Yeah.
So, if you're wearing spandex and fighting evil, you'd have to, like, you know, put a little makeup on. Come on.
You know. I think my makeup would just naturally be on if I were
I could see that.
Super,
I could see that, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah.
That would be an awesome, that would be an awesome superhero chick, really. Cosmetics, you could call her. And her power is makeup just appears on her face all of a sudden. Wow, that'd be pretty.
That'd
be pretty empowering, don't you think?
That would be like the worst superpower. That's worse than being a super genius and making yourself Ant-Man.
You know, the Wasp, actually, you bring up Ant-Man. The Wasp is a very, very interesting character. And you know, let me just read this real quick. You know, she started off Janet Van Dyne, who was, you know, she's a wealthy socialite. I just decided to hit my mic. And she basically became the Wasp so she could spend quality time with her boyfriend, Ant-Man.
Which is kind of interesting because her quality time, like, she wanted to spend quality time saving the world.
Yeah.
Like, that's just kind of weird, but also awesome. But yeah, I mean, she... Granted, you know, her life wasn't exactly, there wasn't exactly much going on if her job was being a wealthy socialite.
That's true.
So she wasn't exactly giving anything up to be, you know, to be the Wasp. But at the same time, like, on the one hand, it's kind of the bad example of drop everything to be, you know, to be with your man. On the other hand, it's the, wow, your man's actually doing something, like, useful with his life, and you're just sitting around going to parties, you know? So it's, in that case, it's not one of those drop everything to be with your man.
Exactly.
It's look at me, I could be a superhero too, and we could spend time together, and I can help you deal with the fact that you have an inferiority complex because you made yourself tiny.
Yeah.
Like, that's the funniest part about Ant-Man, just how upset he is about life, you know, because, like, he hates being tiny.
Yeah, and then he became Giant Man, and, you know, that made him a little happier, I think.
Yeah, it did to an extent, but at the same time, he was still so busy being, like, you know, angry because he'd been angry for so long.
He's an angry guy, you know?
Yeah.
Some chicks love that, you know, the angry guy.
That should be a superhero or a villain.
What?
Angry guy.
Angry dude. Well, there was. Didn't you see Mystery Men, Mr. Furious?
Ben Stiller, Mystery Man.
That was his power. He got angry.
Yeah.
Nothing actually happened. He didn't, like, you know, She-Hulk out or anything, but, you know.
Yeah.
She-Hulk's really interesting. I love She-Hulk, the cousin of Bruce Banner. It's just, you know, she's a lawyer by day and She-Hulk when she gets angry.
Yeah, it's
very,
a little
very
weird.
Kind of interesting, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because Nick Cage a long time ago was talking about wanting to do a film version of She-Hulk, and I just can't imagine people wanting to see that.
I mean, again, it's one of those, like, if it's written well, but I think you need to really establish a good Hulk, you know, series before you can bring in She-Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one thing to make someone like Wonder Woman, but then to make the character like a monster, you know, and be female, I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I don't know how monstrous She-Hulk is. I think she might be more in control, or at least was more in control before Hulk.
I guess she's a big green monster.
But that's kind of the point that we're trying to make here. Like, does it require the sexy female in order to make it an okay hit? You know, like does it require that? And if it does, is that okay with us? You know, is that okay with people that you can't have a female hero unless she's, you know, stripped down naked and, like, you know, and the most beautiful woman ever?
Yes.
Like, yeah. But anyways, we are actually going to take another break.
Couple of great geeks. Dave and Anna, the geekiest people you'll ever meet. On 92.5 KYHY, Geek World, Thursdays at noon.
We are back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero superhosts, Anime and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Check out our website at geekworldradio.com and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio. Just another reminder for all of you, in case some of you are just tuning in, if you want to win tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con from May 27th to 30th at the Phoenix Convention Center, you should send us an email with the geekiest thing you've ever done, or maybe make up a great story of the geekiest thing you've ever done, and the funniest, the best story that we get is going to win, well, as far as we're hoping, 2 tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con. So send us your stories to geekworldradio@yahoo.com, and hopefully you will win 2 tickets to Phoenix Comic Con.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
All right, so what are we talking about now in the land of lady geeks?
Well, I do believe that in the land of lady geeks, we are going to talk about some of our favorite super ladies in a sense.
Not
necessarily super heroes,
yes.
but some of our favorites of the ladies of geek.
Yes.
Some of the best. Some of the best of the best.
Okay, so are we doing the list of the best then?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, yes. This is the list. This is we've compiled a list of 10 of probably, in our opinion, the best of the best of the geek kind of icons for women out there.
And I'm sure we've left off millions. And,
yes.
And I'm sure you all have your own list,
yes.
And are going to be like, why didn't you add this person?
But guess what? We have the list we have,
uh-huh.
So just take that and deal with it.
This
okay.
is geek world,
so,
not your world.
Exactly. So number 10 is, before we talked about her, Chun-Li.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the first playable character in video games, but also...
In fighting games.
In fighting games, yes. But also, you know, she's just awesome. You know, she's a cop. She's after Shad Lao. She, though, is out for vengeance because her father was killed by M. Bison. But she can definitely scrap with the best of them. She can stand up against any man you know, just as easily win as any other character.
And while her recent movie, Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li, wasn't wasn't great, that doesn't take anything away from how awesome Chun-Li is, and we appreciate that. It was Kristen Crook, so
yes,
you know,
exactly. And Kristen Crook, I thought, did a good job, and you know, the movie just wasn't quite all there.
Yeah,
though that
well,
awesome lesbian mating dance.
Well, yeah, there's the awesome lesbian mating dance, plus the fact that it was written pretty much like a softcore porn.
Yes, yeah, all of her VO.
It's
felt
really
the
disturbing.
City inside
it's,
of me. It was exhilarating.
Yeah, it really.
Yeah.
It's kind of disturbing.
Everything was new. Yeah, it was sort of like this. Instead of the story of Chun-Li, it was sort of like the story of O. That's a good point. But
okay. Next, do you want to say more about Chun-Li?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Number nine,
we got Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, played by the completely amazingly awesome Katie Sackhoff,
who, by the way, is one of the greats for playing a tough female.
Totally.
Because she's beautiful, but she's her unique look gives her that tough edge.
You know, Starbuck. I know a lot of guys out there, especially guys, but even some ladies out there who did not want to watch the new Battlestar Galactica because Starbuck was a female.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because, you know, Starbuck and Apollo were males in the original, and people didn't like that. Though we talked to... did we talk to Ron Moore about this? Or just an interview that we read? I can't remember.
I think it was an interview we read. I don't think
I don't know if we asked him this question. Yeah. We were too busy asking him about the Star Trek work he did. The thing about Starbuck, you know, that's really, really cool is the fact that, you know, she's really kind of the toughest person in the universe.
Yes.
You know,
the best pilot. She
is a very, very unbalanced character.
Yeah.
And a very, very tough character, but she's the best pilot, like you said. And I think, you know, they did a real service in the fact that they weren't they didn't try to perfect her. They gave her, you know, she had issues. She wasn't like Wonder Woman. She wasn't like, you know, we saw Cleopatra Jones not too long ago when we were talking about our Blaxploitation show. And she just came off sort of boring because she was like a male Superman.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Starbuck, you know, she is as conflicty as any sort of not anti-hero, but just kind of any male hero that you generally get.
Mm-hmm.
And she was more manly than Apollo.
Yeah. They actually, it's one of those roles where it wasn't written to make her female. It was written as she's Starbuck. It's just the character of Starbuck and the person playing it happens to be a female.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, Starbuck happened to come out being one of people's favorite characters.
Totally.
If you want to talk about role models, definitely not a role model. If you want a role model from Battlestar Galactica, it's President Laura Roslin,
totally.
Who, you know, is strong and smart and confident and a true leader.
Totally.
Starbuck, you know, she can lead people into battle and she can, you know, and she can kick butt in the sky, but she's totally unbalanced.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's had issues in her childhood and abuse.
Yeah.
And she's got so many issues that she's always dealing with.
She follows sort of that archetypal cowboy story that you generally hear where she has the abusive mother, which usually with cowboys, it's abusive father, and she has all the issues. You know, she drinks and gets into fights. She sleeps around with whoever she wants to. She had an affair on her husband. Things that are generally kind of restricted only to male characters, action heroes. Usually when females are sleeping or, like, you know, having affairs, they're sort of vilified as this, slut or whatever, you know, you want to say.
And it's the opposite of the Jason Stackhouse character in True Blood, where, you know, he sleeps around just because he's kind of the town slut, whereas she sleeps around because it gives her this feeling of power.
Yeah, well, not only that, but she's just very conflicted. You know, she's very conflicted. A character, she doesn't really know what her destiny is. She has this big conflict in her, and it's very much, like I said, an archetypal, generally kind of male cowboy/superhero type of character that is portrayed just amazingly by Katie Sackhoff. All right, number eight,
Dana Scully.
Yes,
we just talked about her. The brains and beauty, but the brains trump the beauty.
Yeah, I mean, she is, Gillian Anderson, just one of the great TV actresses. And Dana Scully, I think, really did a lot and is a super fantastic role model. A doctor, an FBI agent, she fights monsters.
Mm-hmm.
She even had
a monster grown inside her.
Exactly. You know, she even immaculate alien conception, though it wasn't immaculate.
No.
Like we said, you know, they really didn't end up a couple until the very last movie, and that very last movie was just pretty much for the fans.
Yeah,
it's like, this is what you guys want at this point. And I think that they were able to keep her integrity throughout. I mean, she stayed on the X-Files for two or three seasons after David Duchovny left.
Yeah,
and she was the main character of the show. And I just, when I think of, like, really truly great respectable female characters, she always comes to mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think respectable is really the big word there.
Yeah. So number seven of the best of the best of the geek female characters out there is
Lara Croft.
Yes. Once again, we already talked about her. You know, she was probably the biggest video game sex symbol. You know, she is part of what makes her sexy is that she's independent.
But she'll never be sexy to you again now that you think of Sly and Cliff.
Exactly. We just ruined it for you.
Every time you look at Lara Croft, we want you to think of Sly.
You know what, though? You know what, though? They have an ace in the hole, and that's Angelina Jolie. Because once you see her, you pretty much forget about. It's very easy to forget about Sly and Spandex.
You even forget that she's in a movie with Daniel Craig, and she's playing a British person, and he's playing American.
Yeah, exactly. And she saves him. And that's the thing about Lara Croft, too. You know, she saves the guy. Mm-hmm. The guys are the damsels in distress.
Yeah, just like Buffy. It's great.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she's totally self-motivated. She's totally, everything she does is she has accomplished herself. And she's a great role model in that. You know, you might not want your daughters to dress like her, but at the same time, her character is...
Well, honestly, you shouldn't have a problem with your daughter's dressing like her. She wears a pair of shorts and a tank top.
That's true.
I mean, that's actually pretty, I don't know, I think most girls wear that, and actually it's, you know, far more... respectable than many of these.
That's true. It's better than Witchblade. That's for sure. All right. So, who's next?
Next, actually, we have someone who is more of a villain.
Yes.
We've got Catwoman.
Yes.
Catwoman is actually a great character for so many reasons. But one of the great things about Catwoman is everything about her. It's not supernatural. Her power, you know, this isn't
outside of that stupid Halle Berry movie.
This is something they actually took away in you know, some of the more recent incarnations. But yeah, it's not supernatural. It's the fact that she is a cat burglar. She uses, you know, her agility and speed and, you know, what she can do humanly, and uses her femininity in order to, you know, steal diamonds and things like that. And it's all everything that she can do in the same way that Batman, you know, he's just a human. He's just a man, and he happens to be a very rich man, so he can make a lot of fun toys. But you know, he's just a man. She's, you know, she's just a woman, and she uses everything that she has and is the, you know, the best crook around.
Exactly. I mean, she is a match for Batman. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not Vicki Vale, who just kind of shows up and is like, I want you to be my boyfriend.
Yeah, Vicki Vale, who, you know, is one of is one in a long line of reporters that you know love their superheroes. But, you know, whereas Lois Lane never goes out with the intention of getting into trouble, she goes out with the intention of getting the story because she's the best reporter around. Vicki Vale goes out with the intention of getting all messed up so that Batman will save her. It's like, you stupid jerk. I hate you. You do such bad things for women. Stupid Vicki Vale.
You know, and Catwoman is really interesting because there are a few incarnations, and, you know, I think that people know her very well from the movies. Michelle Pfeiffer obviously played a psychotic version of her in Batman Returns, and Halle Berry played a just wish-she-were-psychotic version in the regular Catwoman. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, definitely the Batman Returns one comes off a lot better because, you know, she comes off strong, though crazy. When I thought that the Catwoman one that Halle Berry did just came off very sexist.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that it became this supernatural thing and took away from the fact that Catwoman could do all of this on her own. I mean, it's like it's the exact opposite, but with the exact same result of what we were talking about with Wonder Woman for that time that they took away her power and just made her like this normal chick. You know, the thing was that part of what made Wonder Woman awesome was that she had superpowers and was as strong as Superman. Just like part of what made Catwoman so awesome was that she had no superpowers but was still a great match for Batman.
Totally.
Like, that makes her amazing. And so then to add the supernatural aspect really takes so much away from the strength of the character.
Yeah, and, you know, as a man, I appreciated Halle Berry's costume, but as someone who respected Catwoman, I thought it was just a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like... It's
impractical,
it's,
too.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a really bad Halloween costume.
Looks like a really bad dominatrix outfit.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just the silliest thing ever, and it just came off really poorly, and which is really sad because, you know, I thought she, though she couldn't get any sort of accent correctly, I thought Halle Berry was pretty good as Storm from the X-Men.
Yeah.
And so it was sad that she played that character.
Well, as we found out, Storm shouldn't have had an accent anyway because the original incarnation of Storm was born in America.
Yeah, but I don't get what happened because I know she spent her childhood in Cairo.
She did. She spent a lot of her childhood in Egypt and is actually said to have possibly had a criminal record over in Egypt. But she's still American. American-born citizen.
Yes, though she has an accent, I'm pretty sure.
Sometimes. I don't know about punk Storm.
Yeah. All right, so who is number...
Five. Sarah Connor.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah Connor, the woman who... I mean, what can you say? She's one of the most resourceful and smart thinking on her feet people.
She is the Virgin Mary of sci-fi. if the Virgin Mary had a battle and had battle skills and was able to put together a gun while blindfolded. Yeah, I mean, Sarah Connor, you know, was a really great character in the first movie, but she was definitely sort of the one who had to be protected from the Terminator, so she could give birth to, you know, the Christ figure, John Connor. But then, you know, T2, Linda Hamilton took the character to new level, you know, also thanks to James Cameron, who's done a lot of really great things for women. Mm-hmm. I think he's created a lot of really interesting very strong female characters.
Well, it's funny because the women that he gets involved with are just very strong women.
Catherine Bigelow.
Well, I mean, wasn't he involved with Linda Hamilton at one point, or is that?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah. But either way, you know, it's like he's very familiar with actual very strong women.
Yes.
And so, you know, the women that the roles that he creates for them, it really, really seemed to kind of take off of these women that he knows.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that, you know, the way she played it in T2 was just unbelievable. I mean, she's one of the strongest female characters and performances of a strong female character of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I thought that Lena Headey did a very great job in the show, The Sarah Connor Chronicles, also as Sarah Connor. So, you know, this character...
Too bad, again, that show wasn't better written. I mean, it was a show with this great pilot and a great pilot that showed great female characters. Again, that showed really strong female characters, and then it just kind of fell apart.
It's difficult anytime you have an established end. Yeah, where you're going to go, you know, it's very difficult. But yeah, I mean, Sarah Connor is just awesome. Mm-hmm. Totally, totally cool. So who is number four?
Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Okay, now, you know, you might be upset that we're not putting Wonder Woman at number one. But Wonder Woman, you know, she's got as many issues as she does, you know, awesome.
This is our list, so we put her number four.
Yeah.
You know, Wonder Woman, you know, first big iconic superhero female. Obviously, she fights for good. She has all kinds of power. She's an invisible jet.
Yes.
And she's totally, totally awesome in every way. I think that, you know, I wouldn't put her at number one just because I find her kind of boring.
Well, it's funny because, you know, she's not as boring as Superman because there are things that can make her more vulnerable by, like, taking away her bracelets and her lasso, you know. But there are things you can do to make her more vulnerable than Superman could ever be. But, yeah, any of these super strong characters, physically super strong, they have the potential of being way more boring.
Yeah, and any Golden Age hero from DC or Marvel, unless they, you know, now the newer incarnations, they always, you know, they make them a little grittier. But when they start off, they're very, very milquetoast.
You know,
they're very like vanilla, and it's just really they have to be good and noble.
Hey,
and
if you're milquetoast or vanilla, would it be less milquetoast or vanilla?
I have no idea. I don't even know why I use those terms. But you know, though I really liked in that Justice League New Frontier, the way that they kind of brought Wonder Woman back to kind of very vicious and very kind of tough.
Yeah, Amazon Warrior.
Yes.
Yeah, she was absolutely. Yeah, if you watch New Frontier, you'll really have a different perspective on what you may have traditionally thought of Wonder Woman, because this is what her nature was always kind of supposed to be, as this real warrior.
Yeah. All right, so we should get to number three, right?
Buffy
the Vampire Slayer. You know, I think that Buffy is I think she's my favorite female hero. I just, you know, everything about her is really cool. I think the fact that, you know, and sometimes she can be just a confused young girl who, you know, doesn't know if a boy likes her, then the next minute she's saving the world.
Yeah.
A god run amok.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that kind of realism in such an unreal world is just a testament to not only how great Joss Whedon is, but how much respect he has for the character.
Yeah, the way that he can bring in the softness without softening the character. You know,
yeah.
And you know, to be perfectly honest, some of the best writers, they can do that with their male characters too. It's that idea that you can give them a soft scene or a scene where they are vulnerable without making the entire, you know, being of the character as vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think unlike, you know, someone like Wonder Woman, you know, Buffy is, you know, she's imperfect. You know, she doesn't always make the right decisions, but at the same time, she always does what she thinks is right. And I think that that's a really important thing. Because she is very human, you know. I think those frailties in a person really make a character stronger.
You know, Buffy is actually one of the people that's very unlike a lot of the other people on this list. The other people on this list are all very, it's all very individual. It's all very, I'm the strong one, and I'm, you know, Buffy is very much understands the importance of team.
Yes,
and that's one of the other things that makes her so great. That she has no issues with working with a team, and it doesn't make her feel like she's being downgraded to ask for help or to receive help. Whereas a lot of these other characters are a little less like that. You know, they are more, I'm the hero.
Yeah.
Or I'm the leader. I think our number one when we get to it is also totally willing to be part of a team.
Yeah.
Although as we'll talk about when we get to it, doesn't always have that opportunity to be part of a team. But
exactly.
But yeah. Do you have anything more to say about Buffy?
Yeah, I did. I totally forgot though. I think I don't remember what I was going to say. I think what was really cool about Buffy, is that the one thing about Buffy that's really neat is that, you know, she sort of is also, unlike a lot of these other women in this list, she sort of has that Spider-Man story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was a regular person, and then all of a sudden she found out, you know, she wasn't bit by radioactive spider.
She was a regular person having weird dreams.
Exactly. And all of a sudden she finds out she's the Slayer, and she's sort of, you know, it takes a long time for a character to go from sort of victimized by this to empowered by this.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that's one of the things that really humanize her and isn't debasing at all, because she's, you know, a girl. They didn't have to be like, oh no, she has to be perfect, you know?
And I think that's
like the real big thing that I think, you know, you can tell me, but I think that what women really want in their characters is just for them to, you know, for them to be like realistic, mm-hmm. or for them to at least have like respect for them, that you don't have to make the characters perfect. You just have to make them, you know, good and interesting.
Well, also the assumption, you know, that a lot of the writers make is that there is a difference between the male hero and the female hero. And really, you know, human, in so many cases, human is just human,
yeah.
you know, and that women and men have a lot of the same problems and a lot of the same issues. And unfortunately, people refuse to really see that. And they try to make, oh, you're a woman and you have woman issues yeah. to deal with. And the other thing is that, you know, in Buffy, very rarely was the I'm a girl thing even dealt with. Yeah. It was just she was a girl and she was beating people up. They were beating vampires up. And yeah, sometimes it would come in kind of as, you know, someone would be like, wait, you're just a girl beating me up. And it would become a joke. But it was never really a big issue.
Yeah, well, and luckily it was established already that every Slayer is a female.
That's,
so at least
yeah.
the monsters were aware of the Slayer.
That's true.
So number two, you know, I don't know how people are going to feel about number two, but I am strongly, strongly for this. Mm-hmm. And that is Lois Lane.
Mm-hmm. Now, it depends on which incarnation of Lois Lane that you're talking about. Superman Returns Lois Lane absolutely does not fit on this
Horrible.
List. Horrible. Kate Bosworth played it terribly.
Yeah.
And the role was written, every role in that movie was
yeah.
written just horrifically, so much so that they actually destroyed what the characters were.
Yeah. And my faith in Bryan Singer,
yeah.
which is really difficult.
Yeah, but Kate Bosworth as Lois Lane was one of the biggest travesties.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, they took a lion and turned her into a mouse.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about Lois Lane, a lot of people might not like that she's on this list and so high up on this list because they might think of her only really attached to Superman, but the kind of point is that Lois Lane is the best humanity has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lois Lane always goes out for justice, always is tenacious, goes after the story,
mm-hmm.
always gets herself in situations where basically there's only two things that can happen. She's either going to die or Superman's going to come in and save her.
Yeah.
But she never relies on Superman to come and save
yeah.
her.
Yeah, it's always kind of like, well, I might die. I mean, I hope Superman can find me, but, you know, I went out for the story. And yeah, it's just like that. It's she never goes out to be the damsel in distress like a Vicki Vale does.
Yeah.
She goes out to get the story, and if it just so happens that she gets trapped in a cave, then, you know, the hope is that Superman will be there. But if not, she's still going to be looking for places to move rocks out of, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, Superman, the reason that he goes after Lois Lane and loves Lois Lane isn't because she's, like, the hottest girl in the world. It isn't because, you know, it isn't because she loves him or anything. It's because she is so impressive in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she is so strong and so noble. And I think that she really... She's the great, great sort of divide when it comes to Superman and the difference between the best in humanity and the best that this alien can bring to the world.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, Lois Lane is one of the, you know, things that really helps Superman to see his own humanity, to hold on to his own humanity. You know, parents pass away, and in some of the incarnations of Superman, his parents have passed away. And
yeah.
so his link to humanity is just based on the people he cares about at that point. And Lois Lane, being one of the people he cares most about, really helps him to hold on to his humanity and his care for the human race.
Totally. I totally agree.
Okay, so on to our number one?
Number one.
Number one, Ripley.
Yes.
Now, like I said, one of the great things about Ripley is, like Buffy, Ripley has no problem working as part of the team. In fact, you know, in the first Alien movie, she's one of the people that really keeps her head about her
yes.
when people are freaking out.
Yes.
She's able to really keep her wits and be strong. And another character that wasn't necessarily written for a woman, but Sigourney Weaver was the absolute best person to play her. And again, another person who's just so great at playing tough and strong females, largely helped along on that by the fact that she's very tall,
yeah.
which just gives her an imposing look to begin
yeah.
with, but
she's so
but
tall.
She's just so good.
She's so tall. If you watch Annie Hall, you'll see a cameo of her, and you'll just see her torso because you can't see her head because she's just so much taller than
yeah.
everybody.
Her head is in the clouds, not like she's a daydreamer.
You know, we talked about the end scene of Alien, how, you know, she gets in her underwear and gets in the spacesuit, and it's just, you know, it's just so showing of the fact that she's so intelligent. You know, she figures out a logical way to destroy the alien. She doesn't grab a gun and blow it up. That happens in the next movie, Aliens.
Yeah,
and you know, she shows all the resources resourcefulness of what a woman can be. You know, I think what a hero can be. But you know, one of the things I found being a guy, and sometimes I like to be a little lazy, and I always find that a lot of women tend to be very resourceful. And the way that I look at this is sort of like in Aliens, when Ripley takes the machine gun and then takes a flamethrower and tapes them together so she can defeat the Queen Mother.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you know, she in Aliens, she was a big hero, went and saved the little girl, and then, you know, Alien 3, they shaved all her head off, she got on a prison planet, but she took that alien down, then they Duncan Idaho'd her and cloned her for resurrection. but she had powers at that point. And you know, the Ripley character has just kept on going and changing, and really just was this completely new thing that really just inspired men and women.
Yeah. I think it's really important that there are these kind of role models out there. But I think it's really important for people out there who are in the entertainment industry to understand that if you're going to write some female heroes, you can't think of that. You can't think of it as I'm writing a female superhero. It's I'm writing a superhero character, and oh, look at this, it happens to be female.
Yeah.
You know, if you're writing Wonder Woman, you don't write woman first and Wonder next.
Yes.
You know, you write superhero first. That superhero happens to be Wonder Woman.
Exactly.
You know, you need to really focus on the hero, and don't do what Superman Returns did. That doesn't make it like, in case you didn't notice, that movie didn't attract men or women. It made everybody angry. You know why? Because they took everything that was super about him and made it not super anymore. You know? You can't just focus on the emotional and forget about the kick butt.
I gotta say, if Howard the Duck didn't exist, I think Superman Returns would go down as probably the worst superhero movie ever. I hate it beyond belief.
There's definitely ones that are worse, but yeah, I mean, it's
they're worse, but what the indignity that those major characters, those fantastic beloved characters.
It's true. Yeah, they take Lois Lane and make her into this, you know, person who's so bitter that Superman left that she writes this article why the world doesn't need Superman. Like, I'm sorry, but that's not Lois Lane. That's bitter and, you know,
catty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, anyway.
Yeah. So I think that if we have time this week, we might go through and on our blog list out some of our favorite writers and showrunners and show creators that are females. But we actually don't really have any more time for this episode of Geek World. But don't forget to send us your emails to geekworldradio@yahoo.com so that you can try and win some tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con. You know, send us your story, the geekiest thing you ever done, or make up a story, whatever the funniest, best story is going to win tickets to the Phoenix Comic Con for later this month. So email us, geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Check out our website at geekworldradio.com, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio. Don't forget to tune in next week, same time, same place.